You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
It's 8:06 right now. If you're just joining us this morning, thank you so much for listening to the Civic Media Network, or maybe you've been along for the whole 2 hours. Thank you for sticking around with us. We always appreciate it. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. The question to you at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Can you really celebrate your country's history if you are bound and determined to whitewash it and remove any semblance of controversy? I say no. You have to take the good with the bad, and the history is the history. But on Friday, U.S. Department of Education arrived in Brookfield, right here in our own backyard, to deliver their History Rocks tour. That sounds like an engaging way to get the kids involved in history. However, it raised concern by some anti-Turning Point USA protesters, as well as people protesting the current Department of Education policies on what they see as a larger effort by this administration to indoctrinate young people. So there were about 24 people protesting outside the high school. They had signs that read, "Next come the brown shirts," or TP equals less safe schools. That's TP for Turning Point, referring to that group and, that was founded by Charlie Kirk. And now his widow, Erica, is running it and selling a lot of merch and coming out to fireworks and all sorts of things. But it's an interesting case because we've seen it before with this administration as they're removing any reference to slavery at different national parks, and they're removing anything that reflects badly on, let's call it what it is, white people in this country. We're going to take that away. Where I think we need to, we have to learn that part of history so that we can be embarrassed and horrified by some of the things that have happened in this country, so that we don't make those mistakes again. Like, I think we need to pay more attention to the internment camps during World War II. You know how I learned about the Tulsa race riots? From Watchmen. That's how I learned about that, because I never heard about it in school. So we need that.
We do.
And this program has come under fire before, but came to a head locally in Brookfield the other day.
It did. And let's be clear what this is. Secretary of Education Linda McMahon launched this cross-country tour back in December. And she called it a chance to highlight excellence in patriotic education, civic literacy, and student-driven civics projects in classrooms across the country. And the tour announcement came after the Trump administration spent the year essentially gutting the education department, where they fired 1,300 people.
Yeah.
And at one of the early History Rocks stops, which was in Illinois, McMahon arrived with Erica Kirk and the chief executive at Turning Point USA, also, as you mentioned, the widow of Charlie Kirk. And some students who attended that Illinois event said that the assembly appeared to be partisan in nature, really, you don't say, and focused on Charlie Kirk's vision for Club America, which is Turning Point's student group, along with Christianity and traditional values. Now, here's the thing, and this is going to be an issue for all of us across the country and here in this state. We need to be paying attention to what's happening, because public schools are supposed to be places where students learn this history, as you so eloquently discussed, not places where political organizations promote their version of it. And that's essentially what they're doing right now. Whether you're conservative, whether you are a liberal-leaning family, whether you're somewhere in the middle, events tied to these sort of outside political groups, no matter what the outside political group is, raises legitimate questions about influence in our classrooms. Now, let's say for one wild moment, a Democratic administration partnered with some left-leaning activist group, right, to run assemblies in public schools where they claimed that religious persecution throughout history against white people never, ever happened. How many conservative parents would rightly be upset and say that politics doesn't belong in public education?
Well, those Moms for America we talked about earlier would be on the case.
Yes.
No, imagine if you're a black or brown student and you're at one of these public schools. And granted, history education in this country, as I mentioned, has been woefully behind. We are, you know, the history books leave out huge swaths of our history. So to pretend that we haven't been whitewashing our history to a certain extent,
of course,
would be irresponsible. But imagine sitting there and you're like, wait, they're saying all of this didn't happen. Or now in Brookfield, they said that this was not the case. It was not the executive made like a 5-minute speech. The principal said he knew what the executive was going to say. He knew what he was going to say. And then they got into about 35, 40 minutes worth of different history games and things like that that were run by the social studies teacher. So this instance, it was what they kind of sold it as. But as you mentioned, Jamie, this has not always been the point. And I can't imagine having to sit there and have my history as a black or brown student erased. It just, it's that old saying, right? Those who don't remember history are bound to repeat it. Well, we are on a track of, it's not that we've forgotten history, we're erasing history.
Mm-hmm.
So the Germans, they don't embrace their history, but they know their history and the atrocities, and they've hopefully learned and you move on, or there's groups that try to go back to that. And that's where we are, where we're trying to go back to a way that we have this idealized view of.
If you want to chime in on the conversation this morning and you want to answer the question whether this is really a celebration of American history or if this is a whitewashing of that history and an attempt to indoctrinate our kids, we'd love to hear from you. You can call or text us 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-75-CIVIC. Now, the other part about this is, and this, the principal of the Brookfield School might be a fine human being. I don't know. Never heard anything about the gentleman until this particular story. But I thought his response to this was interesting. I mean, there's protesters outside your school. Some parents chose to keep their kids home from school because of this particular event. And the principal said the difference between the History Rocks event at his school and the perception before it occurred doesn't really surprise him. So I think he kind of knew what he was getting into. But he said, quote, unfortunately, we're in a very polarizing society right now, and it's been that way for maybe 15 or 20 years. I knew this wasn't going to be anything other than celebrating America. Okay, I'll give you that, principal. But at the same time, then perhaps not have Turning Point USA.
It's not technically Turning Point USA, Jamie. It's the Department of Education. And listen, I have to believe him. Because, again, we don't know the principal,
Brett
Witzmacher of Brookfield. Yeah, but it's okay to have speech on your campus that people might not agree with.
Sure.
Now, you could argue that's great in high school and college where the kids are a little more developed, but in elementary school, maybe not so. But if he's genuine when he said, I knew what they were going to say, because they have to review the programs before they bring them into school. They don't just get a pitch from the district and then blindly let something in. So if he knew ahead of time what was going to happen and he determined, no, I get it. There's a lot of people who think one way about this or the other. It's okay, I can bring them in. And yes, there's going to be protests. And it's okay. It's okay for those people to protest. It's okay for parents to keep their kids home. But it gets dangerous if then we say, we can't have these people on.
Right.
If you've already vetted it, then, and your social studies teacher is running the games and everything, so they had to have advanced copies of this to look through it and go, no, it's straight up history. And you go, okay, then we're going to have it and go from there. I don't have to agree with the policy. And I don't have to agree with, like, if what happened in Illinois happened in Brookfield, I would have a different point of view. But since the principal says he knew in advance what was coming, I have no problem with it being there. I have no problem with the parents being upset, too.
Right.
But sometimes...
I think
we have a right for to speech. We don't have a right not to be upset.
I think when organizations like Turning Point USA are involved in any of these programs, right? Even ones that are disguised as social studies, history, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
I think when they start getting access to our public schools and our assemblies, it really blurs that line between education and political messaging. And we know that this administration has been trying to do that they tried to do it during Trump's first presidency.
Sure.
And private schools, like here's where some of this discussion gets a little different too in any state. But private schools can choose to host whoever they want for speakers because they're private schools and that's part of their independence. Public schools, I feel like, are a little bit different because they belong to the entire community, families of every political belief, religion, every background. And that's why events that are tied to, in any sort of way, to a politically affiliated organization should make all of us pause and start asking our school administrators questions about assemblies like this. And I get it's called America Rocks. I understand that. The organization is still tied to Turning Point USA.
Yes, there are those ties, and there's 100% those concerns. Again, I have to fall back on if it was fully vetted and you knew and you've reviewed this program before and you can say, okay, you know, the kids are learning what we teach them in history. This is the presentation matches the curriculum. And it's you know, you don't know up the ladder into the districts and the superintendents, and this is coming from the Board of Education,
sure.
And it's coming from the Department of Education, and yes, but the optics are bad.
Yeah,
100%. I don't think the kids were
no.
harmed in any way by it. I think it's a bad move, but we don't know if the principal did his due diligence.
Sure.
Who knows what pressure he was under? Because principals do not.
Right.
Act autonomously. They are not the president. They actually
right.
have to get approval from the district for any kind of programs and things that they do. So the kids,
yes.
the kids were not hurt.
No.
The optics are bad.
And I'll
we'll
be,
move from
and again, I'll be clear that I think that the school probably did everything and the staff probably did everything that they needed to do to vet this particular assembly. I just, as a parent, I would have a lot of questions. And I would have a lot of questions if it was a different president. I would have a lot of questions if it was a democratically leaning president who brought in a different group. And Tiffany over in River Falls, listening on 93.5, The Tap chimes in. She says it's a religious organization. It doesn't matter if it's just history words being said. It's being put on by a religious group in a public school.
It's not though. And
right.
I'm sorry. I have to.
No,
Tiffany,
agreed.
With all due respect, it's not being put on by a religious group. And I think the blowback from the earlier episodes on this tour is at this point, Turning Point is not affiliated with this. This is done by the Department of Education. Now, I am not a defender in any way of Turning Point USA, but we got to save our outrage for where it really matters.
We have to be measured.
Yes, you are within your right to protest this and keep your kids home and all of that. But let's not mix up our outrage. It is not done by a religious group. And yes, if Muslim people working for the Department of Education came in to give a talk or a presentation, I would not have any problem because it's not a Muslim religious group. I know we got to wrap up. It's a Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
From Lake Superior to Lake Michigan, this is Wisconsin's Morning Conversation. Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:22. Our job today, Brian, is to make Parker sweat because we keep pushing everything to the very absolute moment.
It's okay. It's okay. Good thoughts. Good thoughts, folks.
Proving once again,
depends
we don't always agree.
Depends on who you're
agree.
Talking to.
Proving once again, you and I don't always necessarily agree,
no,
and that's okay.
No, we don't
okay.
agree, Yes, and listeners are welcome to, you know, when I disagree with you, it's not a personal thing. So we want you to, if
we
you do genuinely disagree, that's okay. And we want to have these conversations. And we want to have them right up till the last second.
We do.
And I want to see if one day I can throw Parker into perhaps a stroke or a heart attack. And he's a very young man in good health. Good. So it would take a lot.
We're getting close today. Today we're getting very, very close.
If you don't end this segment in time, Brian, I'm going to lose it.
Let's get started so that we can get out of
here. That's right.
But the segment, I mean, not the show. We still got time to go. But I thought the name Carrie Lake had been erased from history. I thought, and we talked about her earlier in the show, so now she gets two shout-outs in one show. That's two more than she needs. She's a busy bee, that Carrie Lake, and I don't know what, I just meant buzzing bee. I don't know what bee you thought I meant. But anyway, a federal judge overseeing a number of legal challenges to the administration's drive to dismantle the Voice of America ruled Saturday evening that Carrie Lake had acted unlawfully in running the network's parent agency. That's surprising. U.S. District Court Judge Royce Lambert wrote in his ruling, quote, Lake satisfies the requirements of neither the statute nor the Constitution, end quote. Boy, that's going to be an epitaph for pretty much everybody in this administration when history writes itself.
How many times do different levels of this administration basically have to be told that they aren't following the Constitution in plain black and white writing from judges? I mean, this is, I've lost count of the number of judges who have actually had to put this in writing, which is even crazier and tells you the kind of times we live in.
Can I give you just a couple of Carrie Lake's greatest hits as the head of this? Just because she dismissed all contractors. She laid off almost all the permanent network and agency full-time staffers at Voice of America. She fired the director of the Voice of America, striking a deal to carry content from the right-wing TV network One American News Network. And if you've ever seen any clips online from OANN, man, you think you've heard crazy right-wing conversation? You ain't heard nothing yet, brother. Enjoy it. She withheld money from sister networks such as Radio Free Europe and Radio Free Asia, and she killed a lease for a new headquarters. So she's been very busy, Jamie.
She has been very busy, and all of this was first reported last August. Where credit is due, National Public Radio. There were a number of questions about the legality of her taking on the title and the powers of the agency's self-declared acting chief executive. The judge's ruling follows a series of courtroom exchanges in which Lambert has found the government's arguments that Congress had no role to play in the future of the agency and the network unconvincing, and actually called Carrie Lake's credibility into question from the bench. Last summer, he even threatened Lake with contempt of court. Now, this is just a reminder, though, for all of us, because I know that it gets really hard in this country, especially right now, to understand the constitutionality of things. But this is just a reminder that we still do have guardrails. Presidents appoint people to run agencies, but those appointees still have to follow the law, as Lambert rightly points out. They can't simply dismantle institutions because it fits a political goal or a political agenda set forth by a particular administration. And judges are not there to push a president's agenda or block it, if they feel like they are going against the Constitution and the laws that have been set forth. Sometimes administrations forget that. I know, it's hard. And when administrations go against the Constitution and basically engage in dismantling it, the courts are going to step in for the most part. And that's actually good for all of us, because whether you voted for this administration or not, the same legal protections apply today that apply to the next administration, to the next administration, and the next administration, right?
We don't think that far ahead, Jamie.
Why
would I worry about, there's never going to be another administration, right? We're making rules because we're never leaving.
Please don't say that, because that will make me stay up at night. But in case anybody's wondering,
just put it on your list of reasons you don't sleep.
You'll be fine.
I'll be fine.
Voice of America was originally created during World War II because it was there to provide credible news to people living under authoritarian governments. Its mission has always been to report the news, even when that news maybe reflects poorly on the United States.
Well, then, I think we've stumbled upon the key to the whole mystery. Scoob, we've unmasked the man. There
it's
it
not,
is.
It's not too hard. I feel like Scooby-Doo could solve a lot of this, honestly, if we just brought him and Shaggy and a few Scooby snacks into the equation.
100%.
But honestly, the government at this juncture with Carrie Lake in charge of Voice of America and what we were watching being dismantled over the course of the last few months, that felt like it was leaning more towards propaganda and some sort of state-run network instead of journalism, which is what Voice of America has always been.
But look at what they did to CBS. Look what they tried to do to AP. Look what they've done everywhere, dissenting voice, or not even dissenting voices, just
factual voices,
news and journalism. And I don't want to hear, oh, but every news outlet had a slight slant, but the facts still drove the narrative.
Right.
And that's the difference. If you let facts drive the narrative and you trust that people will be able to make their own decisions, that's what we do in this country. But if you want to just, if you want people to just fall in line and capitulate to your needs and your ideas and your wants, then look at countries that have state-run media and see how that's working out, because it could come here unless we continue to fight.
It's a good thing we have courts in this land yet. That's all I'm going to
say. Now,
for
those
now.
Those are probably going to go
now,
away too.
Especially when they don't like what the president says. It's 8:29 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And there's more data center information coming out of Beloit. It is the Civic Media.
Wisconsin wakes up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. If you are in Appleton and Oshkosh listening on WISS, or in Wausau listening on WXCO, or even in La Crosse listening on WLCX, we are so glad that you decided to join us this morning. And hey, if you don't, you know, you can't listen to us on the air, you can always go get that Civic Media app as well.
That's
it's
correct.
Free to download in your Apple or your Google store. And of course, you can always listen to us online on YouTube and on the Civic Media Facebook page. And hey, this is where we get to give a plug to our new Facebook page. We'd love for you to go follow that, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. And, you know, we'll start posting a lot more stuff now that we're permanent and all that good stuff.
And go to where all the cool kids used to hang out, Instagram, because we have an Instagram page too.
Yeah.
So, I think some cool kids still go there.
I think so.
He said, hoping he was still cool.
I'm old, so I still check out, you know, some of those platforms, but I know that that's not where all the young people tend to hang out now.
Based on what comes up in my algorithm on Instagram, there's a lot of young people.
There are.
Still on there.
They're not
as much as on TikTok, but
yeah. Well, there you go.
I can't keep all of them straight. You know what else I can't keep straight?
What's that?
All these towns who were dealing with data centers.
There's a
data
lot of
them. Data centers have become, they're the bane of my existence now. Just because every day there's different data center intrigue. So now it's Beloit. We got to turn our attention to Beloit because they signed a pre-development agreement with a company exploring a possible data center project on the northeast side of town. The site is an existing gravel pit. Covering about 430 acres, sometimes referred to in planning documents as Project Corn Maze.
Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
So apparently this particular presidential administration also named this database project as your data center project too.
Listen, if we name it Corn Maze, they're not going to get any clue that it's a data center. They're gonna, who doesn't love a corn maze in the autumn? Everybody loves a corn maze and a pumpkin farm, but...
Well,
that's not what we're
doing.
I think
that's a little interesting because we've actually talked about how some of these companies are coming into these Wisconsin towns under LLCs with shell companies involved, and they're trying to push through these data centers so that basically the town and the citizens don't really understand what is happening. And that feels a little bit what like what's happening in Beloit right now. The agreement is with Cambrim LLC, and they registered in Wisconsin just last year. And the city of Beloit says that discussions are still very preliminary, and no formal development applications, site plans, or proposals have been submitted quite yet. Cambrim is currently in talks with the property owner to purchase this land before moving forward with any development plans. The company, Brian, is also paying for early studies, including a sewer and water infrastructure review to determine whether the site could actually support a data center, which I think is fascinating because this doesn't really feel very preliminary to me.
No.
When you
once
hear
you
about
get into site studies and yeah, and once a company is willing to pay, they're already committed. They're
yeah.
Hey, here's a bunch of money. Maybe we won't even be able to come here.
Right. And speaking of money, under this particular agreement, the developer will actually reimburse the town of Beloit up to $175,000 for costs related to reviewing and studying this project. Now, because remember, this is still very preliminary, future steps could include rezoning the property, negotiating a development agreement with the town, possibly creating a tax increment financing district, or TIF, to support said infrastructure.
Every day, and I'm not exaggerating, really. Every day, there's a new data center thing happening here, and I don't know if you're in one of these towns, if you're in a more rural area that has a lot of open farmland around there, you know you're going to be a target for this pretty soon. There, one of these companies is going to come to your leadership and make an offer, whether it's out in the open or whether it's one of these secret deals that we talked about a few weeks ago that are happening in some towns. You've got to be worried. And that's, you know, I know the other day we talked about who they were talking about pumping the brakes, whatever town we were talking about then.
Yes,
or whatever
moratorium counties. In the Northwoods.
Yes,
yes.
Just going, okay, we gotta slow this down. And that seems to be the overriding sentiment of a lot of residents of these towns.
Right.
Like, hey, we haven't done enough. There isn't enough evidence to say that this isn't going to do more. Yes, it's going to raise our utility costs, which is bad. But what's the long-term environmental impact? What's the long-term impact on agriculture here in Wisconsin? What are all the things that go along with this?
Mm-hmm.
And unlike the war in Iran, we should take the time and really think of down-the-road aspects.
Right.
Not just go for the quick money grab or the jobs that are going to be created, because we know, yes, while there may be a great number of jobs in the development phase and the building phase, do those last, or do then all these people who you employed for a couple of years to build this thing suddenly find themselves without any work?
Yeah, absolutely. Again. And if you want to chime in on this morning on the conversation, either with a phone call or by text, remember that number, 1-855-752-4842. That's 1-855-75-CIVIC. Now, you mentioned it, why data centers are such a hot commodity, so to speak, right now in Wisconsin. It is because a lot of the land, it's because of our access to power. We also have a cooler climate that helps with cooling massive server facilities. And in some areas, there's also access to nuclear or renewable energy sources. And if you're a company like Meta, which we've seen them be at the
yes.
helm of a lot of these, Wisconsin is going to check a lot of your boxes. From a community perspective, though, there's all of those questions. And I guess one of my biggest questions would be in some of these towns for the leaders of my city, because these early conversations are happening behind the scenes. And, you know, oftentimes these LLCs come with a name we're not familiar with. They don't specifically list Meta in the title, right? They're not saying Google in the title of what these new LLCs and companies are. I would
like
have a
Operation
lot of questions.
Corn Maze. It's a little
right.
misleading.
TriStar
is coming in, and I don't
yeah.
know if that's a real company. I'm just, you know, but that's what they do.
If I was in, you know, a town like Beloit or in any of those cities in the northern part of the state that have put a moratorium on data centers or are trying to, you know, I would want to know about some of the groundwork that's in motion before this actually happened. Because, again, when you listen to the plans of what's happening here with Project Corn Maze, it seems like the city is a little further along than, hey, we're just talking about this. This might be a thing. Maybe not. But we're going to get some kickbacks if this happens. And, hey, heck, I don't blame a city for trying to get a little money into their you know, their budget.
Yeah, but there's other ways. You can do with speed traps like a lot of them do.
Yes. You know,
but the Illinois plate makes some money.
But I think we have to be honest with the people who are going to have to live with these data centers at the end of the day. And it doesn't feel like some of these cities are doing that. They are going for the cash grab instead of actually thinking about how this is going to benefit the city, not just in the now, but down the road. Now, documents in this particular Beloit case filed with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources shows a connection between Cambrian and filings previously linked to a Meta data center project that was also in Beaver Dam. Remember that one? That was a big one just a few weeks ago. Yeah. And ironically, or not so ironically, I guess, they used a similar approach when Meta Platforms initially developed its Beaver Dam data center through a different LLC before publicly announcing that project. Do you see the pattern, folks?
I do. And the other, this is, so in response, not maybe not in response to this, but just coincidentally, Senator Mark Spritzer and Representative Clinton Anderson, who are both from Beloit, they introduced a bill aimed at protecting Wisconsin families and small businesses from higher energy costs tied to those large data centers. It would require the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin to create a special rate category for very large electricity users such as data centers. Now, I don't want to say there's a correlation between this proposed bill and the discussions Beloit is having, but what better way to calm citizens' nerves about the proposed rate hikes that would come and how much more they're going to have to pay than by saying, don't worry, we got there. We're protecting you. We're going to set up a whole thing. And if it doesn't pass, well, we tried, Beloit voters. We tried.
Right.
That's not on us.
Here's the thing, too, with this particular bill that is being proposed. The Public Service Commission would determine whether those rates are fair or if they unfairly shift costs onto customers, regular customers, not data center customers, but just regular customers like you and I, right? Yeah. So if those rates are found to be unreasonable or preferential, the PSC would be required to adjust them so that companies would have to pay their fair share. Now, the lawmakers say that this bill is important as data center projects are being discussed in the city of Janesville and the town of Beloit. So they did kind of show their hand a little bit there, but that's okay. Supporters argue the goal is to prevent large tech companies from passing energy infrastructure costs onto the local households as well as small businesses. I mean, and I think that's going to be, we've talked about this numerous times about these data center projects. There are several bills right now in the Wisconsin legislature surrounding data centers. Now, nothing's going to happen with those bills because the Senate's getting ready to gavel out here in about a week or so. And we know that the Assembly is already like on week 2.5 of their 9-month vacation. So nothing's probably going to come of those bills. But really what these are, these bills are not anti-development. They're not anti-economics. No. They are simply making sure that residents and small businesses are not being left covering the bill and there's more transparency surrounding the data centers moving into these areas. And I think that's important. That's why we keep referring to the moratorium in northern Wisconsin. But that's essentially why those communities, three of them, are asking for this one-year moratorium so that these projects can be studied with more in-depth analysis than quickly pushing things through.
Sometimes civic leaders who are looking at budgets see a big dollar amount come across their desk and they don't think long term. They think let's solve this budget problem now with this. That's going to be somebody else's problem down the road and I'll just kick the can and go from there. And that could be, and I'm not singling any civic leaders out. This is just, let's be honest, across the board, people don't think of consequences for down the road, especially in politics. This is going to be somebody else's issue. It's going to be, you know, my kids will all be grown. I won't have to worry about the schools. I'll have moved down to Florida to live in the, you know, mm-hmm. in the colonies with.
I think it's interesting, though, when multiple towns, because it's not just one or two at this point.
No.
Port Washington has the folks in Port Washington. They went to their city council. They fought a data center coming in. We're seeing communities start asking more questions. We see communities that are starting to show up at these city meetings or these planning meetings. And when that many people start hitting the pause button at the same time, that usually means that they feel like things are moving too fast.
Yeah.
And the technology economy is growing. Data centers are going to be a part of the future. And
sure.
Wisconsin communities right now and the people who live in these communities are really just making it clear that these projects are probably going to happen. And if they do, they just want that transparency. They want proper planning. And they want a chance to weigh in on how this is going to affect them and how they need to live. Because essentially, at the end of the day, it's going to affect the pocketbooks of several people, especially in the long term. And that's important. We deserve that.
Important.
We deserve that. It's our civic duty to ask these questions, I think. City
people
don't
want to
hear. No, they don't want to hear me say
that. It's a lot of
work.
People have to leave their house. It's a hassle. Hey, speaking of leaving the house, you're not leaving the house, but what's your favorite and most iconic TV show setting? Whether it's a house, apartment, locale, whatever it is, that's what we want to hear at 855-75-CIVIC. It is Daybreak, and this is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:52 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's the Civic Media Network on a beautiful, sunshiny Monday. Hopefully you get outside to enjoy some of this weather. Very nicely done, Parker. Great music choices again today.
I've been working on it.
I didn't even know there was an instrumental version of the Brady Bunch theme.
I had to work like a dog to find this, actually, Brian.
There's always a karaoke
version. I saw you scooting
version.
Yourself across the rug. I should have known.
Yes.
There's always a karaoke version of every song out there, isn't there?
But are there good ones?
This is true.
That's the question.
This is true.
Airworthy for a show of our stature.
That's right.
To get to, yes, we must. We must. What is your most iconic TV setting or TV house? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-75-2-4-8-4-2. We bring this up not just because it's the final segment of the show and we hate leaving on a heavy note, but because there's an actual news story about
there
this.
Is.
And news, I'm using it loosely, but it's all right. The house used for the exterior shots of the Brady Bunch has officially been named a historic cultural monument by the Los Angeles City Council. If you don't know, and why would you, the home is located in Studio City, which is in the San Fernando Valley. If you're a geography buff, that's just above Los Angeles. So it is in the San Fernando Valley. It was used for the establishing shots. You've all seen it. The show ran from 1969 to 1974. That's hard to believe.
Yeah.
5 years of the Brady
Bunch. Do you
even
know what the Brady Bunch is, Parker?
I've not seen it, but I know it.
Okay.
Parker, it's
yes.
a story of a lovely lady.
That's
she
what
was
I
bringing
hear.
Up three very lovely girls.
Yes.
There was four of them. Then
yeah,
she
and then
met
some
a guy.
Came
three
she met a fellow.
Yeah.
A fellow.
She met a fellow.
Yep.
One
yeah.
day that lady met a fellow. She
who
knew that
up...
they knew that it was much more than a hunch,
that's
Parker.
That's right.
That group somehow formed a family, and that's the way they became the Brady Bunch.
And then you put Alice in the middle
because
she actually ran it all.
What was the deal with the butcher, Sam the Butcher?
That was Alice's man. That was,
I know, but he was sketchy.
He was a little sketchy. He only appeared
come over
every
with
now and
meat
then. He did, yeah. I think if you were a fan of growing up with the Brady Bunch, you remember it. And honestly, I was born in 1978, so I remember watching it in repeats. But it was always on.
Oh,
it was on like Nickelodeon, especially when I'd get home from school. Right? You could tune in and you could watch the Brady Bunch. It was wholesome family fun, and everybody hated Marsha because, well, she left Jan
Marsha,
in the
Marsha,
dust.
Marsha.
Exactly. But most of the interior scenes, if you don't know, of the Brady Bunch's home, were not actually that iconic house that you saw from the outside. They were filmed on a Hollywood soundstage, not in the real house.
Big TV lies to you.
It does, absolutely. And what I think is also fascinating is that this property appeared in the films The Brady Bunch Movie, as well as its sequel. People barely remember those. But in 2019, HGTV bought the house and renovated the interior to match the famous TV set for a series called A Very Brady Renovation. And after that renovation, the home was sold for about just over $3 million to a woman by the name of Tina Trahan. She's a historic home enthusiast and the wife of the former HBO executive, Chris Albrecht.
So she had
some money
laying around.
She did. It was a nice settlement. It's good. But Trahan has said that the home will not be used as a private residence and may instead be used for charity events and fundraising activities. So she just
has this.
I would
love to go to a party in the Brady Bunch house. That would be fantastic.
Wouldn't that be awesome. I think that would be fantastic. Fantastically
fun.
But they had the best backyard and they had that great big kitchen. And you remember the iconic scenes of all the kids lined up from oldest to youngest on that staircase. Yes, always.
And they had a cool attic that Greg turned into his hippie bedroom.
Yes.
That was wild.
That was. And then do you remember when the Brady Bunch went really off the rails and all of a sudden they were a singing group like the Partridge Family?
Yeah, I remember that. Well, it all, they were ever since Jan didn't get Davy Jones to sing at the school function. Things went downhill from there.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. What I also find fascinating about the Brady Bunch is if you listened and watch any of the documentaries made about the show, it was a very interesting cast. I mean, you had Carol Brady having affairs with Greg.
Mike Brady.
Yes,
having to live his life as a closeted man.
Yes,
it was nuts.
There was a lot happening in the backdrop of the Brady Bunch, but you will always remember the house, the bright orange kitchen and the shag carpeting where they built their house of cards. And remember that episode where they both had the girls and the boys did the house of cards.
I'm embarrassed to say this, JV. Anytime I make pork chops, I always make pork chops and applesauce.
Of course. You have to.
Peter Brady doing his Humphrey Bogart.
Of course. And anytime I hear a young man have a voice crack, I'm like, oh, Peter Brady, because you remember the song that they made.
When it's time to change, it's time to rearrange.
That's right. So
look that up, Parker. We're going on the Brady Bunch.
I'm not picking up any of this.
I know, yeah, and you shouldn't.
You
thank
shouldn't.
Goodness.
It's good. But the house opened to the public briefly during a 3-day charity event called the Brady Experience. And before HGTV actually purchased the home, it had been owned by the same family for nearly 50 years. With this new designation as a historical site, though, the house now has landmark protections to preserve its cultural as well as its television history, which is, by the way, pretty cool.
That's pretty cool.
It is.
Yeah, and it is an iconic house. You see that and you go, The Brady Bunch house. And I don't know, South Fork Ranch from Dallas was a big one.
Yeah.
Currently that, I don't know where it is, but the main cabin in Yellowstone,
yes.
I would live there in a heartbeat.
Yes.
It's so gorgeous.
You also think of when I think of movies and iconic places, I also think of the outside of the McAllister home in Home Alone, which is in Illinois.
What I think of too.
Yes, that's always a big one. But it was, the Brady Bunch. And it's funny because the Brady Bunch is still part of the culture. Every time I have a meeting, I'm like, oh, time to get on my little Brady Bunch box here and see people across my screen because that's what it reminds me of.
Right, for a show that was really fluff.
Right.
It really resonates and it does, it holds up.
We need more fluff in this world.
We do need
especially
more fluff.
Especially right now.
Maybe tomorrow we'll have a little more fluff. We like to end the show a little fluffy why not? We all have to go on and live. But thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of the program. Another big show tomorrow, Jamie. Lots to talk about, as always.
As always, yes. It never ends. It's 8:59 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. This is the Civic Media Network. Have a fabulous day.
Bye.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.